your very own community radio station.
As we've said.
This is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are your hosts this morning and every Friday morning, 8 to 9 a.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO. If you have not made KBOO your own community radio station, we are listener supported and we encourage you to go to KBOO.fm and donate a little of your hard-earned money to, in fact, support this listener-supported radio effort. Now, all that said, here on International Forest Day, on World Forest Day, right? Because we just found that out. I was going to be all slick and say, hey, we planned this, but we didn't. I like it when the universe, however, supports us in synchronicity. We are looking at forest issues here in the Great Northwest, in Oregon in particular, and to help us have this conversation this morning, we have Matthew Bristow. Matthew is an activist who has worked at BARC, which is the local watchdog for the Mount Hood National Forest. He is currently their canvas director, and I have to say he's also been a KBOO volunteer for years and currently sits on our board of directors. We are thrilled to have Matthew with us this morning. Morning, Matthew.
Hey.
Thank you. Good morning.
And can I just say one thing? One of the reasons we wanted to do this show, too, is that there is all this hubbub about Crimea, Ukraine, things that we have no control over and that don't matter so much. And
oh, they matter, well, but we don't have much control over.
Right, what I'm saying is we wanted to talk about things that, to me, what's going on with the ground beneath our feet, the air and the water that we drink is incredibly important right now. Those are really things that matter that you can actually do something about. And Matthew, we're so happy to have you here this morning.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate this opportunity of you having me on. It's a rare opportunity to talk about something that's so important. And good point. You know, that's something that I talk about with canvassers is, you know, there are a lot of things that are real and real important, but then there are things that you can do something about. And as far as like where you focus your attention, that seems to be like the, you know, it's the wise place. If, you know, for practical
where you can actually
reasons.
Make a difference and things are a little more tangible.
It's not that squirrel over there, or the bright, shiny object to distract us from these things.
Yeah. Let's start out with just a little bit of an overview about the forests in Oregon right now. You know, growing up in Oregon, my family, it was sort of a long line. My adopted dad's family were sort of a long line of loggers, mill workers. You know, my dad was a carpenter and about as far away from the timber industry, you know, as anyone got in the family. He just worked with the finished product, right? Mm-hmm. But in you know, growing up, hearing all these stories, the phrase, oh, you don't ever have to worry about the trees in Oregon, you know, they're thick as hairs on a dog's back. Why, they're going to be around forever. We're not even making... And that's just not true,
and
right?
It's a renewable resource.
Yeah, you know, going from the the early 70s upon hearing all these things to looking at how our forests have been so very fractured, you know, with little pockets of trees standing around the state. Can you give us an overview about the state of Oregon's forests first? Public lands, private lands, how much forest is left?
Yeah, exactly. I can almost see in other areas where countries have been around longer, just those conversations like, this will just always be around. And, you know, you look now and, like, look what's left, you know.
Right. Barren landscapes.
And, you know, people haven't been at it for very long around here, but there sure has been an impact. As far as right now, I think one of the main things I really want to convey is just even personally in the last decade of focusing on the forest, currently at this, so right now there are more timber sales and bigger timber sales than at any other time.
Really?
Exactly. Yeah. The Obama administration upped the cut. And I think, you know, many of our listeners hopefully have heard many times of how, you know, the Obama administration doesn't really have a great environmental record, and you know, it's probably easy to understand that, you know, when I say Obama up the cut, you know, it's I'm not just making that up. And
like, are there percentages on that, or
and that gets translated through each regional and local forest as far as how that all gets played out, but just an overall directive to to increase. So let's see. The other real big concept that I really want to get across today is that I hope people, when they hear certain words in whatever context, that they are skeptical and use some critical thinking. So when you hear words like restoration and thinning, renewable, sustainable, things like that, that's the next thing that's going on right now. So
even forest management, don't you think? Isn't that...
It's exactly with the forest management. It's the whole concept of, like, people are like, if we don't get in there and take care of the forests, what will happen? The forest doesn't know what to do with itself, you know? And
Chris Andre is always screaming, the forest, another KBOO
producer,
and Air Cascadia, the forest can take care of itself, you know?
It was doing all right.
Yeah, it was doing just fine before we got here.
Yeah, our staff attorney, Brenna Bell at BARC, will often say that at, like, appeal resolution meetings with the Forest Service, and their face just goes blank and they go silent. They're like, but without us, you know, what
life itself would be impossible.
Yeah. And I really appreciate that at BARC and a lot of the other, especially radical grassroots conservation, environmental defense and restoration groups really do have this nature knows best kind of an understanding, and to not operate from the hubris of like the people need to be in there and constantly managing it. And so the new thing going on now is, like, it's a theory that's really not played out very long, which is, like, you can be the natural disturbances, like you can be the fire and the insect infestations that help to naturally thin and leave the biomass there. They're saying the theory is, like, if you go in there and you, like, cut in, like, sort of like modified clear cuts, you know, where you leave little patches and pockets, that will be, like, similar to the way the fire is. But of course, when there's fire and when there's insect infestations, that will kind of selectively go and get through, like, one of the first phases of trees. It provides more opportunity for the next stage of growth. And also it's like with gardening, I think any gardener knows, you can't just keep taking out from the soil. You have to give back. You have to let, you know, let
and
it.
And planting a million trees of one kind that are all the same size doesn't seem to make any sense either. And also what I've heard that on them talk about them, I want to say, like, people from the Forest Service on being interviewed on other radio stations, that it's by letting those fires, they've started letting fires go and not doing so much, and that's what's been causing these really enormous, heinous fires. And my suspicion would be that that's not true.
Yeah, that's, so basically the fire is another area to really be watchful of, because politicians know that there's a lot of fear associated with that.
Sure.
So they'll use that as an argument of we need to get in there and do, first the argument was, like, we need to suppress every fire. And so that was an unnatural thing to do. Now there's a lot of, like, undergrowth that would have normally been cleared. And then fire is just a whole nother topic that there's a person named George Werthner that wrote a really great book with a lot of really great pictures on, if you want to check in on that. But so the thing is that as far as with fire, when it comes down to it, it's they'll say, well, we're experts, trust us. And then, so what they're saying is, trust us that suppressing fire is good.
Yeah.
So they're wrong. So now the experts are like, well, they're wrong, but we're the experts, so trust us. We need to go in there and reduce the fuels, because basically, if you cut the forest out, then there's, like, the theory is there'll be less fire. But the way that really plays out is, it's like spreading kindling all over the forest, and it's, you're exposing the canopy areas dry out, and because this is a new thing, the science is still developing, but it's basically like, oh, maybe they were wrong too. Maybe these experts weren't so expert after all. So,
Also, isn't when they clear cut, I mean, there's that, or it's selective cutting, doesn't that just mean that there's like one or two trees left? I was totally under the delusion that selective cutting would mean, oh, we just take, you know, a few here, a few there, but it means there's like maybe two or three trees stuck up there.
I mean, again, we started off looking at the way the Forest Service and other people that are looking to be resource extractors use language. Mm-hmm. And it's you know, it's one of those very Orwellian notions. And so we hear about, oh, no, we don't clear cut, we selective cut. And then you are taking those drives through the state and you see those ridges that have two trees standing and you realize, oh, that wasn't a clear cut. Look,
yeah, literally speaking.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that and why clear cutting, including the not quite clear cutting, mm-hmm. is so destructive to the forest process?
Yeah, thanks. At the office where I work, there's actually on the bulletin board this whole list from a former Forest Service employee. There are some Forest Service employees that are in a union for ethics, and they sometimes sue their employer when they see violations. And one of them made this list of all these euphemisms that they're trained to use, and some of them are pretty amazing, like temporary wildlife opening, a temporary meadow, a view shed. Let's see.
A view shed?
View shed.
Yeah.
Let's talk about view shed. I'm a little curious on what a view shed might be.
Yeah. And basically,
language is a virus. Laurie Anderson was right.
Yes.
Yeah. You could say scenic buffer, or you can say like a Fulham strip. You know, basically that's like how they have landscape architects design. So like the person driving through will sometimes not really realize the extent of what's going on because it's blocked from view.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing about a lot of the groups like the Cascadia Forest Defenders and Coast Range Association, BARC. At this point, most of the groups do bring people out to the forest to see for themselves, because you can read on paper and it looks fine. And then you go out and you can see like it just doesn't look right. It doesn't feel right. And yeah. Oh, the big thing about these, so people really want to protect old growth and people really want to stop clear cuts. Mm-hmm. So the trade-off that a lot of people are accepting today is, well, then thinning is like the acceptable alternative. So the issue with doing thinning is that you are accepting larger timber sales, much larger timber sales, which then spreads out the impact over all across the forest. So that's the big thing, is to acknowledge the infrastructure needed to remove the trees. You now have instead of concentrated in 1,000 acres, like you have 2,000 acres. An acre is basically a football field size.
Right.
And all, so the impact, so the logging machinery, heavy machinery is in there compacting the soil. More roads are being built. Roads are a huge problem. The forest is just crisscrossed with just thousands, like 4,000 miles of roads that the Forest Service acknowledges probably like about half of them are totally unnecessary and redundant. And a lot of them are deteriorating into the streams, affecting the
salmon
spawning. And
it's just like a stream.
Water quality.
Right. A stream coming through the mountain. Then they would just like hoed out a little ravine for the water to erode things.
Yep.
Excellent. Yep.
Yeah. And so the one thing there, like the positive in that really bad situation, is that there are a lot of opportunities for jobs. And so that's one of the things that lately BARC has been advocating for is, one specific vehicle is called the Legacy Roads and Trails Program. That's a program that Congress has that gets people living wage jobs to remove old logging roads, which the old logging roads are kind of like a permanent scar. And it's one of the situations where nature really does have a really tough road to hoe to really get there. So it can be, you can bust up the road with replant and you know, when you do it right, it's really a good situation for, well, for everyone. And
and it helps to bring the forest back. It sort of knits the forest back together, so it no longer has these corridors that exactly. that wildlife have a really hard time with.
Yep.
You know, these strips of sort of nothingness all of a sudden in the middle of their homes.
Yep.
I want to remind people you are listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio. This is Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And if you would like to join in our conversation, you can do just that by dialing 503-231-8187. And we also we have a Facebook fan page. We would love for you to like our Facebook fan page, and you can stay in touch with us, know all about the shows coming up, and you know, share articles and keep discussions going even between Fridays. And that would be facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. You can also email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. 503-231-8187, and Lee is with us this morning. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning.
Are on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I think to put what people are trying to do with forests into proper perspectives, you ought to consider the word manage. And if you break it into two parts, you get man-age.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make forests and trees conform to the age length of men, so that a Douglas fir tree can live 1,000 years, stand after it's dead for another 100-200 years, and after it falls take 200 years to decay. I don't understand how you can man age that species.
I think that's an excellent point.
Yeah, I'm a fan of etymology, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, and you know, from my perspective, we have to let each species of tree, you know, do its thing in its natural way. So, you know, I don't know how you can sustainably manage something like a redwood forest where some of those trees can live multiple thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then the second issue that I'd like to talk about are the native hardwoods, which seem to be completely disregarded throughout Oregon. As a wood technologist at OSU Forest Products Department, I wrote a book called Hardwoods of the Pacific Northwest, simply because they were being disregarded, and we need to have them as part of the environment, as part of the root structure in a relationship of within the forests. We've only got about 7% of the native savanna oaks left. We've got less than that of native ash. And I don't know what's going to happen if somebody doesn't start paying attention to the hardwoods.
Thank you very much for your call this morning.
Yeah, thanks for doing that. I appreciate you doing that work.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. And 503-231-8187, the number to call if you'd like to join us in this discussion of forest issues in Oregon. We're going to get around to what you can do about it and tangible work to change our world and make it a little bit better. It's what we're all about. And good morning to you, Garrett. You're on the air.
Hi. I was actually kind of curious about who pays for all those roads. And are those considered pretty much just a public money grant to the forest to, you know, logging companies?
Those are the type of questions I like to hear. Yeah, that's exactly right. We are talking about a forest that is classified as public. So the taxpayers are the ones that, well, they technically own it and have to pay for it. It's being managed by land agencies that are supposed to be stewarding predominantly the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. And yeah, that's the thing, is that the taxpayers are paying for the administration and the drawing up of the timber sales and the building of the roads, the infrastructure. Yeah, and it's like a subsidized, you know, here's the thing, and you do the math, and you're like, what did it cost? What do we get from it? and you realize that you lost money on it. It's a really bad deal. And you lost the forest.
Right. All at the same time. All it costs us money and we don't have our forest. Awesome.
And we don't have good roads here in Portland.
Yeah.
Oh, details.
We're spending all that money on the roads just used by loggers, yet, you know, there are, the road in front of my mom's house hasn't been paved, and she would have to pay for that out of pocket if she wanted the pavement actually, you know, done correctly in front of her house.
Yeah.
Totally backwards.
Well,
but thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much for your call this morning.
When corporations don't pay taxes, funny things happen.
Yes, funny things.
Fines, and it's all up to us to make up the difference, apparently.
Yeah, and that's the one of the projects that Bark's working on is called the Jazz Timber Sale.
Oh, yeah.
And that, in perspective for a landmark, that's the area around Bagby Hot Springs. So you've probably been, if you've been to Bagby Hot Springs, the forest all around it, the north, northeast, south, east, that area has a 2,000-acre timber sale plan that Bark's been fighting and keeping from happening for kind of a long time now. Just a couple weeks ago, we were downtown at the federal courthouse doing oral argument. We have gone through every step along the way. One of the issues with Jazz is the roads, which is that in this case, there was an example of where the taxpayers did the funding to get the road decommissioning done, but now they're saying they are going to undo that. They're going to rebuild the roads because they need to do the logging, because they need to make money, because the money covers the cost of road decommissioning. It's like, I can't make this stuff up. It's it's like right there.
I'm sorry, the top of my head just sort of blew right off.
I watched it. It was great. Yeah. Wow. That's, yeah, you know, next. Again, it gets into that really crazy... really crazy sort of double-speaky area.
So what do you think can be done at this point?
Well, there are a lot of things to do. One of the main things that's really important is to really have people getting out there into the forest, gathering the data, checking the documents, matching it up, doing the official public comment. A lot of times there are cases of where things get changed because people are watching and because we ask for it and because it's ours. This, unfortunately, because of new leadership at the Forest Service, it hasn't been working like it has in the past. Some of our tools have been taken away, including even with the recent Farm Bill passage. They're allowed to classify things as like categorical exclusions, which used to be just like trimming trees around a picnic table. But now they're able to say like all timbers, like these big timber sales, if they do things a certain way, qualify for that. But at this point, yeah, there's a... basically, in the next month, you can stay tuned with Bark, and we'll be providing more opportunities to get involved. But at this point, we've filed the lawsuit. We're going through the stages, and we'll see what the outcome is on that. But
stay tuned to Bark's website. It's a great website. It will tell you. many things that you want to know, and that I would presume is a great place to stay tuned for.
Matthew, why don't you go ahead and give that website?
Yeah.
So it's www.bark-out.org. That's bark-out.org.
And if you put Bark into the your search engine of your choice, it will just pop right up too.
Nice. And I like to personally keep track of like a lot of the things that are going on around the region with a lot of groups. There's a really serious situation going on with the Elliott State Forest. So when I talk
and
about...
And where is the Elliott State Forest?
So the Elliott State Forest is basically kind of by... it's the coastal rainforest by Reedsport, Coos Bay.
Okay. Sort of the central southern Oregon coast?
Exactly, yeah. Central southern coast. And this is state forest, Mount Hood National Forest, National Forest. Mm-hmm. The situation going on here is, pardon me, is that there's this tract of forest that is home to some of just like the really beautiful, vital, rare forest, and the plan is to, at this point, attempt to privatize it because A lot of groups were successful, like the Audubon Society, Cascadia Wildlands, to protect the marbled murrelet, which is an endangered bird that is that lives there. Mm-hmm. And the thing is so the state basically has a restraining order against it, and they...
Against logging?
Against killing the bird. Against logging, taking it.
Sure.
And so what their plan is now is to sell it, because then they'll be like, hey, we're still not doing it. What they do is up to them. Talk to them.
Right.
So that's where you enter Cascadia Forest Defenders. And Cascadia Forest Defenders have been involved all along in every step of the way. They're basically the last line of defense between the forest and the sawmills. So they've been doing things, going to all the meetings, doing all the comments. They like rappelled from the Capitol building, hanging a banner.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
I remember that.
And at this point, they're saying, well, I mean, we're not going to give up. We're going to keep fighting for the wild. And you know, if the logging companies, you know, if they're not going to, I mean, in regards to the logging companies, and you know, they can't violate the law either, just because
they're private.
Just because they're private, yeah. And there's also support.
Can we talk for a minute about just the idea of privatizing? You know, this is something that we hear. I mean, I'm one of those people that I believe in the commons, right? And so, you know, as a person in this country, we have right to public lands, right? We have public forests, we have public rivers, we have the airwaves that we're broadcasting on right now. These are all a part of the commons, right?
Yeah.
And of course, really since the 80s, there had probably before, but since the 80s, certainly a massive increase in the idea of privatizing.
Yeah.
Because, of course, if one is a public good, well, then, you know, it's going to take public money. And, you know, gosh and golly, it looks like socialism or something, and it makes people a little squidgy. So if we just privatize everything, then the market can dictate. And, of course, we know that markets
are free.
Are not only free.
They're free.
But they're wise, right? Because they wouldn't want to do something that would be bad for business. And so all of their decisions are going to be wise decisions because they want to, you know, and other malarkey, you know, that has been really shoved down our throats for the last 30 years. So the idea of privatizing forests, the idea of privatizing watersheds, and we're going to talk about Nestle in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
This is anathema to people that really do believe in forest health and in the forest having value in and of themselves by providing habitat, by providing air, by providing water.
By just being.
Can you talk about that privatization and where that's taken the forest struggles?
Exactly, yeah. The privatization movement didn't spare the forests. And one of the areas where it's happening is in regards to the watersheds of, Mount Hood National Forest. In this case, Nestle, the world's largest food and beverage corporation,
we definitely believe the CEO believes that water is not a human right.
In his own words,
and that privatization.
Man, I wish I had that on a sound clip that we could just throw in there right now. on my homework for the week.
And this is a case of where the water is currently publicly owned. It's being cared for by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and Nestle wants to come in and get their first bottling plant in the region over by Cascade Locks. And they want to take that water from that endangered fish hatchery and bottle it. And they want it to be transferred out of the public. It would be the first time, actually, that a state agency gave the public water over to Nestle. There are different ways of privatizing and different ways that Nestle goes about business. But this is a particularly dangerous precedent to set. And of course, you know, giving this company a foothold in the region, you know, why should we suspect that that would be the end of it? I mean, you can look around and you can talk to other towns that that invited Nestle in, and they're still paying off legal bills and still, and their water tables are being drawn down. And
I was going to say, they have a very, very bad track record here and also in other countries.
Yep.
Pakistan for one.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, just ask folks in Michigan how that's going.
Yeah, we flew a person named Terry Schweier out from Michigan to talk to the people in Cascade Locks and just, you know, kind of one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that was really important. Another area where privatization is happening is the last public campgrounds and mm-hmm. Bagby Hot Springs are attempted to be privatized in Mount Hood National Forest. And that's currently under litigation.
Tilly Jane.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And again, this is like, it's fairly egregious when you think you're already paying so much money and then they're like, well, we can't afford to clean the outhouses. We need to give it away to a private company that can do it better. And it's like, it's just, come on. Yeah, I'm glad that people are aware and that we're talking about it. And you know, thankfully, a lot of the forest is yet public, and you know,
But they're still just laying in wait. It's like public forest to private logging companies just is, you know, that's product just waiting for them.
Oh, yeah. Looking at the forest as a product is possibly about as close to blasphemy as I can possibly imagine. Okay, maybe I can imagine maybe a couple other things that come about as close. We won't go into them now. Good morning to Justin. Let's go ahead and talk to some of our listeners. They've packed the phone lines.
Oh, good.
503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to get in too. And good morning, Justin. You're on the line.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Long time listener, first time caller.
Excellent. I've always wanted to
I'm just kidding. I just moved to the area, but I always felt like I was going to a show, I should say that.
Yeah, thanks.
I do appreciate your show. Don't always agree with you guys, but you guys bring up some amazing points, and I like to hear about it. I like to hear different opinions.
Awesome.
So I have 2 points. The first one I just want to bring up, because I didn't hear you guys mention it. So you were talking earlier about, your guest was talking earlier about how the Forestry Service new technique is to go in and basically chop a bunch of trees down, thin the forest out to get rid of the fuel. And they say how similar it is to fires and insect infestations and diseases that naturally kill off these forests. And I want to point out the fact that that's completely against the natural order of plants surviving. Because in nature, as you guys I'm sure are well aware, you have survival of the fittest, right? Well, naturally, when insects and fires come through, the strongest trees, animals, brush ends up surviving, and then their seed comes from that, and you have species evolve this way. And so by the Forestry Service coming in and attempting to synthesize this, they're really just doing a huge injustice, basically, to the forest as a whole.
You are saying that a forest can manage itself? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's just an amazing concept. It's a brand new thing. I just read about it on the internet.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And then my second part is, so I spent some time over in Germany, and they have amazing forests there, some amazing old growth, that they do a tremendous job of taking care of and, for, I guess, lack of a better word, manage. And they do actually have a pretty good lumber industry in Germany, but what they do is they will actually selectively cut trees down out of the forest, but not in the same way we do in the United States, like you guys were talking about, where they leave two trees on a hill. They really just kind of pick trees out of the forest, and then they leave that grove alone for decades and decades and allow it to replenish itself, and they move around the country in this fashion. And so they're able to maintain their beautiful forests opposed to just coming in and just hacking and slashing. And I wonder if how the United States would be able to learn from countries like Germany that do a much better job than we do.
Yeah, and they're also giving credits for people to get solar energy on their houses too.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well,
which helps the forest.
Europe's ahead of us in a lot of ways.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know.
And, true that.
Yeah, and there are alternatives that are further along as far as viability, such as hemp, which the hemp plant can actually replace virtually all of the needs that are met by lumber through trees.
So you can just get high smoking the paper then, Matthew? Is that what you're saying?
It depends on what you put in it.
Okay. But,
good answer, yeah. Matthew. Good nice sidestepping of Lynn. 2 points.
Yeah. There's a lot to learn, and it's definitely, you know, there are a lot of alternatives, and mm-hmm. you know, I appreciate you bringing that up.
Yeah, isn't Kentucky actually moving forward right now with research into developing hemp production?
Yeah, Kentucky is historically the area that had one of the biggest and best hemp crops in recent time, a couple hundred years ago. And the hemp crop's basically poised to go in the United States. It's already been really booming in Canada, Germany, China, Russia, the sovereign nations of like the Lakota, Pine Ridge, they were actually growing it a while ago, but the federal agents went in and cut it down. And so Woody Harrelson and Gatewood Galbraith, the former governor of Kentucky, replaced it, bought it from Canada and replaced their hemp crop. They're using it to make this hempcrete that you can mix the hemp with the lime, and it creates this building material that you can build houses with. That there are examples of them in France that are still there many hundreds of years later.
Oh, interesting. Wow. I was not aware of that. That's a hopeful sounding thing.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Ford's first car run off of hemp resin?
The oil can be used for fuel, and the actual composite material, that's actually true. And there are currently prototypes of new cars and other objects and vehicles that are made. You can make a plastic from hemp, essentially. And very, very much worth our while to look into and make happen. So there's a in Oregon, hemp is legal to grow, but it's just the federal restrictions kind of make it like not a safe business investment at this time. People are kind of, you know, a little scared to really get in there. They could, you know, everything could be taken away in a moment, and
so
there's a work to do, but that's moving fast. So that's a hopeful sign for sure.
Yeah. Hey, and thanks very much for your call this morning. I want to give some other folks an opportunity.
Yeah, of course, you guys. Thanks a lot for covering the topic, and have a great day.
Thanks.
Absolutely. You too. So much to talk about this morning. So much to talk about.
I think it's fitting that we should have Mary Jane come on the air next.
I think it is. Good morning, Mary Jane. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning, ladies. Thank you for another great show. Wonderful.
Yeah, our pleasure.
I'm trying to compose myself here and focus because this is a passion of mine, protecting the forest. In the 70s, I lived in Josephine County, and we would go to the sites where they were, I'll try and stay calm too, herbicide spraying. Oh, yeah. And I would like the guest to please address that. I mean, there was so many people affected. They have no idea how the BLM and Forest Service, they're so evil. I mean, we could not talk to them. They use all the words like you're talking about. We went up to Onion Mountain. It was a death zone. There was miscarriages, birth defects. And I know Alcee won a case. We had to leave the area. I mean, it gets really hot, literally. I want the guest to please address that because they were using, they use napalm to burn and 2,4-D atrazine, Agent Blue, Agent White, all the, you know, and I'm sure they're going to be using again. So people need to be aware when they are out on the sites that they are doing that. And spring is a time to be aware of spraying. Once you know about it, people are spraying everywhere, and the helicopters will be out if they aren't already. So thank you, and happy spring.
thank you.
Thanks, Mary Jane.
Thank you. Yeah, Mary Jane was absolutely correct. And yes, all the chemicals that were mentioned, exactly. So there was a really good frontline expose that was funded by the Center for Public Integrity. And it focused on like the Triangle Lake area, the forest in Oregon, where that's true. So basically the deal is when you do these cuts that are in this unnatural way, what happens is the what comes back is basically the weeds. And so what they do to deal with that is they spray herbicides. And the thing is these public forests are where our water originates. Even at Mount Hood National Forest nearby, we have Bull Run, but the rest of the forest are watersheds for other places. And in fact, the majority of the forest, the vast majority, is all connected to a watershed, and that's true everywhere. And the thing about that is when you put herbicides and pesticides into this watershed, it's no surprise that it then shows up in people's bodies, and that you can test people's bodies that live around here, and it's in them. And this is just, very strong words should are coming to mind right now.
Yes.
We'll just try insane for starters.
so true. So I want to remind people you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station. You are listening specifically to Positively Revolting. I'm one of your hosts, Ani.
I'm Lynn, and I'll give you a little clue as to what's coming up this morning on KBOO. That's
sure.
Okay. All right. At 9 on Veterans Voice, Bill and Marvin interview Penny Lewis, the author of Hard Hats, Hippies, and Hawks, the Vietnam Anti-War Movement as a Myth and Memory. She talks about how memory of that time has changed and how history is being rewritten by some historians. Probably they work for the Forest Service. At 10 on Flashpoints, Native American activist Rod Coronado speaks about his battle to protect wolves and other predators from extinction. Vermonters are pushing for a public banking system, and we'll have a special from Moscow, Idaho, this time on grassroots resistance to the tar sands pipeline. At 11 on the Radio Zine, host Michelle Schroeder Fletcher interviews John List, co-author of The Y-Axis, Hidden Motives and Undiscovered Economics of Everyday Life. So thanks once again, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a member, you can fix that really fast by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
It's ever so true. Also, while you're clicking around on the internet, Positively Revolting does have a Facebook page. You can follow us there at facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. You can also email us at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. Our number here in studio is 503-231-8187. We have just about 10 minutes left, so do get your calls on in. And good morning to Harry. Oh, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Yes, I have a question for your guest.
Matthew.
Yes. In the forest, we also have who controls the mineral rights and the mining rights? Do they have a lot of mining going on in the forest?
They do, yeah. And mining's not really my area of expertise yet, but it's a very serious. So it's true that citizens can get claims, which gives them the right to extract minerals. They don't own the area, and people can still go there and use it, and there are rules and laws to follow. But it's true. There are different types of mining that have a bigger impact than others, and different types. I mean, like panning in the stream is one thing, and then like suction dredge mining and using chemical extraction methods is another thing. And do you know a fair amount about it? Would you like to mention what something that you'd like us to look into?
No, just that it seems to be very quiet. I mean, there's a lot of mining going on in the state, and no one's really saying anything about it.
Yeah,
it's the national forest.
Yeah, there are some groups. I know that Cascadia Wildlands focuses and does a good job, and I've learned some things from them, and I know that Oregon Wild as well. So I'd say to look into what those two groups have to say, and I will as well.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. There are so many issues to talk about, and really just no shortage of them when it comes to our public lands in the forests. For people that are really interested in making a difference, one of how can people plug in? We just started out this morning, Matthew, talking about the tangibility of this issue. Yeah. As the world goes to hell in a handcart, you know, good things happen here and there, but man, we are overwhelmed with just kind of scary international news and a lot of stuff that is a little out of our reach, but our forests, it's a local issue. It's right here around us, and people have made a huge difference in the past. Yeah. How can people plug in?
Yeah, I'd say that I don't want to be presumptuous and say how you particularly, the listener, should do it, but you should do something, and there are a lot of things to do. So I'd say find the fit, try things out, see what works for you. I'd contact these organizations. I'd contact Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project. They work on the east side forests, the Blue Mountains, Hell's Canyon Preservation Council. Around here, closer to the signal of KBU, the groups like BARC, Forest Web, Cascadia Wildlands, Cascadia Forest Defenders, and I could go on, but the thing is basically you get involved, and they the groups provide free training to do the thing that's best for you. It could be in the office, it could be from home, it could be in the forests, and of course there's always making the phone calls, sending the letters. What I'll do is I'll leave at the front desk people to contact, some numbers as far as like, so when I mentioned the Elliott Forest and what you can do about that, you can contact the Department of State Lands and tell them that you don't support the privatization of our public lands. So that would be Governor Kitzhaber, that'd be Kate Brown, the Secretary of State, and Ted Wheeler, the State Treasurer. As far as with the other national forests, definitely Wyden and Merkley and Walden are three members of Congress, DeFazio as well as a fourth, that have a lot of say. And so especially if you're one of their constituents, definitely let them know repeatedly what how
loudly.
You feel. And loudly. Yep. And please support groups like Cascadia Forest Defenders, the website forestdefensenow.com. And you can support however you could support for funding for legal defense when they do sit-ins and actions. You can provide like gear if you have that, things like that. Other ways that you can help, definitely learning more. In a couple of weeks on the 3rd, BARC is hosting a forest ecology talk and multimedia presentation called Why Dead Trees Matter. And
awesome.
Great title.
Yeah, and it's here in Portland. The details are on the bark-out.org website. So let's see. Yeah, so I like, personally, I like the work to get out into the forest, but I also definitely like the work that I do just going door-to-door, facilitating people going door-to-door, making sure that people know about what's going on and then the ways that they can get involved.
There's a petition going around about Nestle. Is that a BARC thing or somebody else?
Yeah, Nestle wouldn't be subject to any petition. So I believe that there were some concerns that there was the Portland Public Water District, which is the attempt to transfer the Bureau of Environmental Services and the Portland Water Bureau out of city into a board.
I remember that, but I was at People's Farmers Market the other day, and some guy had a petition about Nestle's, and I usually don't sign things that I don't know anything about, so I was just curious.
Well, there are some things that you can sign regarding keeping Nestle out of the gorge. For example,
I think that was
the people that are involved in making decisions are the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Oregon Water Resources Department. So they may have had like a postcard or some type of a petition that they would then submit. And that's very much, it could have been going to the governor as well.
Okay.
To keep Nestle out of the gorge, it's something that Roy Elliker, the director of ODFW, could pull the petition applications at any time. Of course, would probably want to get the okay from his boss, the governor. So talking to those two people, and then there's also a board of directors that you would contact as well. And all of those things can be found through just a simple internet search, and I can leave something at the front desk. But okay. Yeah.
That's wonderful. So I just want to remind people, you are listening to Positively Revolting. Our guest this morning is Matthew Bristow. He's an activist. He's been working with BARC, which is a watchdog group for the Mount Hood National Forest. We have just a few minutes left in the show, but if you would like to call, you could do that right now. 503-231-8187. And, I guess prognosis.
Yeah.
What's coming right up? What are the next things that are really going to be happening?
Some of the next things coming up, there's the ONC lands legislation. That's basically the some of the forest around here that is they want to go and do another boom bust cycle of logging. And the prognosis on this bill from Senator Wyden is actually not good at this time, because there's been so much opposition by so many people. So that being defeated is really important. And again, with all these things, I'm not just saying this is the right thing to do. It works. Like working at BARC several years ago, we stopped a pipeline before pipelines became really big again. It's like we stopped the Palomar pipeline, part of the LNG, liquefied natural gas infrastructure. A lot of groups took on different segments. We took on the part that would have put a permanent clear-cut corridor through the forest, 47 miles long. And that was because of the work that everyone did all together. And coming up also, the Elliott, the Jazz timber sale, airstrip timber sale, which is involving protecting old growth snags. Those are basically how dead trees matter, because that's providing habitat and mm-hmm. and food source. And decisions coming up on Nestle. This is going to be a busy month.
Sounds that way.
I'd say is to stay tuned to KBOO. Please support KBOO. KBOO is an excellent resource for all of these things, the news department and all the public affairs programming.
Well, that's a fine note to end on, don't you think?
I think so. Thank you so much for being our guest this morning, Matthew.
Oh, thank you as well. My
pleasure. And thank you for your work with BARC.
Thank you. Thank
and
you
on for the board, of course.
With Gabriel.
Yes. we look at you, the listeners, to do the right things, to be involved in the ways that you see fit, as Matthew was saying. It's important to try. I like that on. Try it on. See what fits. Mm. And because there is so much that needs attention and care, and we are the people to do it. Yes?
We are it.
Because if not us, right. Okay, enough of that. We'll be back next week, Positively Revolting as ever. And we hope you are too.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
This is Jamila from Guess Who's Coming to Radio. As you may know, the show has taken a hiatus from being on the air. While I will still be involved in radio, I'm here to welcome the ones who will be there on Thursdays, doing radio, which is positive, aware, and proactive. I thank you all for your support and positive words and energy. And just know that it means a lot to me. Wherever you are, stay focused. And keep listening to KBOO, your community radio.
Good morning. You are tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming right up, it's Veterans Voice with Bill and Marvin. At 10 o'clock, stay tuned for Flashpoints. Native American activist Rod Coronado speaks about his battle to protect wolves and other predators from extinction. Vermonters are pushing for a public banking system. And we'll have a special report from Moscow, Idaho, on the grassroots resistance to the tar sands pipeline. And at 11 o'clock on the Radio Zine, host Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher interviews John List, co-author of The Why Axis, Hidden Motives and the Undiscovered Economics of Everyday Life. Right now, we go to Veterans Voice. Hey, and by the way, if you're not a member of KBOO, you can become one very quickly by going to kboo.fm and clicking on where it says Donate Today. Thanks a lot for doing that.
Everywhere, man, we bomb everywhere. Way more than our share, man, we bomb everywhere. We bomb the mountains bare, man, found the desert air. Oh boy, don't we care, man, cause we bomb everywhere. We've bombed in Peru, Panama, Pakistan, Yemen, Libya, Laos, Syria, Sudan, Congo, Cuba, Korea, Kuwait, Colombia, Cambodia. Hey, we great. Grenada, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Vietnam, Yugoslavia, El Salvador, Afghanistan, Japan, Bosnia, Somalia, Indonesia, Iraq, China, Iran. Time to attack, yeah, we bomb everywhere. Way more than our share. Don't think we ain't fair, cause we'll bomb everywhere. We got family values and moral majority, peace, love, Jesus, top priority. Do unto them for the do unto us, the kingdom come in nuclear dust. Monumental profits being made for the big shareholders in the old arms trade. They lust for the dust of a mushroom cloud. It's making them all American proud. Yeah, heat seeker, bunker buster, desi killer, napalm, phosphorus, uranium, smart bomb, A-bomb, predator, prowler, raptor, raven, tomahawk, hellfire, flags of waving. We bomb everywhere, way more than our share. Oh boy, ain't we fair, cause we'll bomb everywhere. Our vision of peace has become a ghost, but we're number one, we bomb the most. Soldiers coming home suicidal, we sit and watch American Idol, Saudi, Serbia, Mexico, Kosovo, Romania, Germany, load them up, here we go, another verse. Life gets worse, just watch your show and wait for the glow.
Welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, and 100.7 FM Albany, Corvallis, Eugene, or streaming on the World Wide Web at kboo.fm. You can also hear some of our past shows if you go to kboo.fm/Veterans Voice, one word. And I'm Marvin, along with Mr. Bill.
Good morning.
And today we're going to be speaking with Penny Lewis, author of Hard Hats, Hippies, and Hawks, the Vietnam Anti-War Movement as Myth and Memory. Ms. Lewis is an assistant professor at, Bill, listen to this, assistant professor of labor studies at the Joseph P. Murphy Institute for Workers' Education and Labor Studies at City University in New York. Uh-huh. I'd never heard of that. That's interesting. Also, our last show, we had Don Blackburn on, and he's the author and a Vietnam veteran, and he wrote the books Into the Heart and All Have Given. And I got some calls about people wanting to know how they can get a hold of his book. And you can go to create:4310251, and you can get his books that way. And they're pretty good. I have both of them. And Don's been a good friend for 20 years.
Good books. Yeah, very insightful.
Oh yeah, and he lives in Vietnam most of the time now. And later, after we talk with Miss Lewis, we're going to talk to Bridget about information on the Women Veterans Conference that's going to be going on in Eugene later this month.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, that's really important because you know we saw. If you were watching the news today or listen to the news today, you know, I don't understand why women would go in the military in the first place. And this general got off today, basically got off with a slap on his hand.
$20,000.
Yeah, he had, you know, $20,000 fine, and he resigned real quick. You know, because if they would have kicked him out, he would have lost all of his
benefits
and his pension and all that. But what they did to those women, you know, they just basically said, you know, so what?
Yeah.
So what? And it was just like a slap in the face of these women. It was so horrible that he got away with that. And I was looking on the web this morning, and there's a picture of him back there standing. He's got this smirk on his face, and he's got his little beret on and his uniform and, like, a whole chest full of ribbons, you know. And like Gary Lacker says, I wonder what they did to get all those ribbons, you know. And he and his attorney's just laughing, you know, like, say, oh, this is done. Let's go get a cup of coffee when, you know, when these poor women, you know, they were abused by this man. And nothing's going to happen, you know, happen to this guy. He basically got off free. And they also, at the same today, I think it was a midshipman at the Naval Academy who was charged with assault and the rape of another cadet, female cadet, at a party. And he got off today, too. He got off. And it was so horrible what the questions they asked that young woman, you know, during the trial. It was just so horrible. And he got off. He got off today. And he...
Yeah, that's double jeopardy, isn't
it?
Oh,
boy. I tell you what. Women, I don't understand why women would go into the military. Plus, also in the military, there's the sexual assaults on men is really, really high.
Oh, yes.
And, but you don't hear much about that. But it's really high in the sexual assault on men. Tammy, have we got Penny? Oh, great! And so the sexual attacks on men